From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Everyone, and welcome to another giant kaiju-sized edition, well, maybe not in length, but in terms of subject, of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Dusing, and joining me is my friend Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Ahoy.
Ahoy. Yes. Hello, how are you?
tonight's topic, we're doing our annual Godzilla show.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, we're doing another Godzilla episode, and the plan was for us to see Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
We were going to see it yesterday, but the one screening in my area was pretty much sold out. There was like a seat in the front row, but sorry, not sitting in the front row. Can't see shit, you know?
And right. Same here. Yeah. Same here. The front row is totally open, but I'm not doing it.
So, you know, I haven't heard good things about Shin Godzilla, so I really wasn't like burning up to see it anyway.
Same here. The trailers didn't move me.
No.
He looks like a bowling pin with AIDS.
Yeah, I mean Godzilla looks like his arms are all shriveled up. It looks like he's got like Lou Gehrig's disease or something.
Yeah, and some guy on Facebook was like, "Well, that's the way Honda intended him to look in the first film." I was like, "Well,
I don't care how Honda intended him to look. That's not how he fucking looked, and that's not what
I've
people
also
like.
Heard he was originally supposed to be a big squid." And should they just make him a big fucking squid? But
this is how Godzilla was originally intended. Forget the last 50 fucking movies.
He was originally supposed to be a carrot that rolled around.
Yeah. So,
that matters is what I.G. Tsuburaya made in that first movie.
Exactly.
That's Godzilla.
Exactly.
Period.
Like,
even in Godzilla vs. Megalon, he's still that Godzilla.
Not to discount the great Ishiro Honda. But
no.
A.G. Tsuburaya, like a lot of these people who worked on those original Godzilla movies, are integral to what we love about Godzilla, and Tsuburaya is a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, that was the monster he created.
Yes.
And I wasn't excited by the trailers for Shin Godzilla. Now, we did have a listener who saw it.
Uh-huh.
Butch, right?
Butch saw it. He despised it. A friend of mine, Jay Johnson, saw it. And I said it was about as entertaining as looking at a stop sign.
Yeah, like that's.
He wanted to walk out of it. He actually wanted to walk out of it.
Didn't. And Jeff Zornow was threatening to block people who don't like it. So, you know.
Yeah, Jeff.
Jeff's an anomaly. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I've hung out with Jeff Zornow. He's definitely on a different wavelength.
He lives on a different plane than the rest of us.
Yeah, but my thing was with like Butch thought it was pretty boring, and I thought if we were going to get to see it, then we would just bring Butch on the show to talk about it, because Stu's obviously not going to see it. But since we didn't get to see it, and I don't really care. I don't really care that I'm missing it.
I know, like here's the thing. When I pulled up my app to buy a ticket, my mm-hmm. Alamo Drafthouse app, I was sitting there kind of going, I kind of hope I can't go, because I would rather just sit at home and do the alternative.
I didn't really feel like going to the Alamo, because I know I'm going to spend $15 on food and drink,
yeah.
And I don't really have a big entertainment budget right now, and
yeah,
I just
neither.
Didn't care. It's like, I'll be able to watch this in 2 months. I can go buy it at Best Buy for like...
Yeah. I know, and here's the thing. It's going on the shelf either way, because it's a Godzilla movie, and I own every single Godzilla Blu-ray that's been released here.
Yeah.
But recently, there was a Godzilla Blu-ray that was released, Return of Godzilla, a.k.a. Godzilla 1984.
Yes.
1985, if you had it on VHS here. But the American version. But that was the first Godzilla movie I ever saw.
Really?
Yep.
I forget how young you are.
Yeah.
You're actually... Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first one I ever saw. So it was not available on DVD or Blu-ray in any capacity until recently Kraken put it out.
Right.
And so I had recently bought it, and I was just like, well, why don't we do that? Because it'll give me an excuse to revisit it.
Right.
Because it's one of the, I think it's one of the only Godzilla movies I haven't been able to see lately.
And it's been tough to see, especially in its original Japanese cut.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I don't think it's ever been available here.
Well,
it's
only been available. The only way to get an English version was there was an English subtitle version released on Hong Kong DVD about 10 years ago. But I bought it and never watched it. It's not one of my favorites. I'll just go ahead and.
I mean, that's kind of generally agreed upon. I just meant in region one, though. You know,
right. In region one, it has never been available in America because Anchor Bay had announced they were going to put out Godzilla 1985, which is the New World Pictures American version, which is a bit different. It's quite a bit different. And they announced they were going to release that. Toho said, you don't have the rights to release it. You know, we still have approval over who can release that version or anything. And Anchor Bay didn't really want to fight them in court. And so they just canceled the release. And I actually wonder I think Anchor Bay announced Super Fuzz at one point, and I don't know what prevented that. I think that was another case of somebody saying, you don't have the rights to release it.
Yeah, that's because I had always
heard. Even though they had an Avco Embassy version that's different than the Italian version of Super Fuzz.
Well, and I'd always heard that was why we hadn't seen it. There was some issue with the rights, because didn't Corman have the American rights or some shit?
Well, that's the funny thing is, Anchor Bay made a deal for all of the post-Corman New World productions, and Godzilla 1985 was one of them, because Roger Corman had sold the studio to some lawyers or something, or it was almost like a stock scam or something, and New World Pictures became something drastically different when they took over, but Tony Randall and R.J. Kaiser, I think Tony Randall had written a letter, not Felix Unger, Tony Randall, but the director for New World Pictures and editor, I think he edited this version. Tony Randall had said that Roger Corman had supervised the production. So I'm wondering if Roger Corman was still running things at New World, even though he wasn't technically the owner of the studio, but maybe he was paid by those guys to keep it running while he started up Concord New Horizon, his worthless spinoff studio.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I do say worthless because New Horizon has never produced anything I wanted to watch a second time.
Right.
And a lot of things I regretted watching the first time. So some people still call it the Corman version, even though Corman's name is not anywhere on there, as far as I know. But I haven't looked at the American version in a long time. I don't remember ever seeing Roger Corman's name there. I saw it in a theater in 1985 in Pleasant Hill, California, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. The deal was Anchor Bay thought that their deal to release the New World version would supersede, or whatever phrase you want to use, Toho's rights to an American home video version. And apparently, they just didn't want to fight Toho's lawyers in court.
Well, they are fucking giant boners when it comes to that stuff.
Oh yeah, they think all Americans are made of gold. Yeah. And we just have gold bricks, we can just hand them.
Well, that's why Battle Royale took forever to come out over here, because they were like, we want a giant release with a wide release.
they don't understand that you can't put like foreign films in massive theaters.
Like, people won't fucking go see them. I mean, I don't care what kind of reputation it has.
It doesn't matter, because Americans don't view movies as art. They don't view they don't appreciate good filmmaking.
It's consumable.
It's a brand. Is it a Marvel movie? Is it a Disney movie? If it's not, I don't fucking care. That's how Americans are. Is it Seth Rogen going, "Hey,
hey!"
Although that seems to be leading to box office decline.
Yes,
but,
it does.
I'm glad.
But Hollywood knows so much about how to make money. Why aren't they? What's going wrong?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, they don't know anything about making money now. It's like we were talking before the show about how they don't know what to do with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
No.
They have no clue. He's doing all these kids movies and stuff. And this is a big, tough-looking guy. He should be the John Wayne of Hollywood right now.
And
he's
not.
The
only time, like, they do well with him is when they cram him in, like, a Fast and Furious movie or something.
Which is going to make money no matter who's in
it,
because Ben Solo isn't really a draw anymore. How many people saw The Last Witch Hunter?
I know.
You're going to watch this closet gay guy
talk
about how tough he is for 2 hours.
Excuse me, John, he's a gay midget, okay?
Right, gay midget.
Yeah, that's how you originally described him.
Yeah, he is a gay midget, but... Yeah, I love how he's like, he's got this Brazilian wife that you see at the red carpet premieres, and he supposedly has these kids that you only read about in men's fitness articles or whatever. It's like, oh,
George Clooney has a wife too.
So does
Tom Cruise has had a few.
I think we know what that means. But,
John Travolta has a wife.
They don't know what to do with Dwayne Johnson. He's the all-American guy, and they have no clue. And I mean, if he gets to do Doc Savage next year, great. You know, but and he's getting on up there.
And I've probably had this rant before, but I don't buy it when people say, oh, Hollywood is a banking entity. They just are interested in what makes money. You know, yet I think that, yes, they've latched onto branding and they want this, that. But they've also fully embraced, like, pause shit, you know, like where, you know, the public clearly hates this Ghostbusters movie, but we're doubling down because the politics are correct. And it's just we'll take the hit on it because
They also think only the city money matters.
Yes.
Oh, as long as it does well in the cities. Well, that's not a 100 million gross right
now. I'm gonna be really interested to see how this new Mel Gibson movie does. The greatest filmmaker of our time.
Yeah, probably one of the best, other than Stephen Chow, probably the best director working.
Yeah, I think he's the best Western director. Let's give him that.
Yeah, I'll give him best director in America.
It's his first film since Apocalypto, the best film of the aughts, I believe.
Yeah, terrific film.
I mean, I think Mel Gibson is a master filmmaker. I think he's a genius, and Hacksaw Ridge is coming out, and I will go see that in the theater, and I haven't seen it.
I wish Legendary Pictures would offer the next Godzilla sequel to him.
Yeah, I know. God damn, it would be so violent. It would be amazing.
Oh, be incredible. Godzilla will be tortured. And stuff,
yeah, Godzilla would be tortured.
And then he'll be like ripping ass in the end.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Gigan and Hedera and the Smog Monster and Mecha Godzilla will be torturing Godzilla and then he'll just rip their heads off.
Yes.
And, you know, the roar will be super loud. And, oh, man.
The roar will say freedom instead of, you know, you'll be able to listen to it and alter the frequency.
Get giant roar and, you know, just radioactive breath off into the horizon and man, it'll be so great. Manipulative, it'll be great, he'll be like pounding his chest. It's just wonderful.
It'll be amazing. And but yeah, Mel Gibson, he's the Hacksaw Ridge. I'm gonna go see that in the theater.
Yeah, I'll probably go see that, but that's probably going to be that's an exception.
But yeah, so like I saw this movie, I saw it on VHS. And I remember going to a Blockbuster and going to some section, and there were all these Godzilla VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to watch a Godzilla movie. Because I was renting, like, I don't know how I got into Godzilla, really. I don't know where the origin was, if it was this or if it was renting Godzilla for the NES, the video game.
Oh, no.
I don't know. I don't know if it was that or what came first, the chicken or the egg. But, you know, it was one of those things. But I remember playing Godzilla for the NES, and I remember playing as Mothra, and Mothra was like way overpowered, and Godzilla was not as powerful. But like Mothra, you could just fly around and blow everything.
God, Mothra is a god.
That's true. Mothra, you could just fly around and blow everything up. Godzilla, you were bound to the ground, so it was like
He was pretty limited. I think I played like a Super Nintendo Godzilla game years ago, and I'm still. Dabbling with video games.
They put out one for the PS4 recently, and I really was tempted to get it. And it was, you know, they tried to make it in the black and white, like, original, make it look like the old movie by that Honda did. But I was looking at the gameplay footage, I was like, this looks like shit. You know, so I ended up staying away.
Well, whenever they do that kind of callback to Honda's original, I always think they're being pretentious. Because there's always those filmmakers like Steven Spielberg that'll kind of claim that, oh, I've only seen Honda's first Godzilla movie, I've never seen any others.
And which I'm sorry, you're missing the best Godzilla movies.
Exactly. You know. To me, the best ones are like Ghidra, the three-headed monster.
Oh, yeah! Ghidra, like, you know, was it, I love Terror of Mechagodzilla, you know, is a great one. But yeah, Ghidra, I think a lot of people agree that's one of the best. But you know, like when I watch the original Honda Godzilla, it's a great movie, but you know, it's not the most exciting Godzilla movie. It's...
No, and I think the series got better.
Yeah,
I think
it
Honda
totally
got better
did.
In the 60s. Yeah. And those movies have a wonderful 60s style to them, just like the Sean Connery James Bond movies.
Yeah, I was about to say, like a lot of them feel like 60s spy films, you know.
Yeah. They're made in that style. And I actually feel like they even predated the Bond movies on a lot of that style, even though they were being made around the same time.
Yeah, they did. Like Terror of Mechagodzilla, it has like this crazy alien spy plot and stuff. And you know, Godzilla Final Wars tried to do like sort of an anime style callback to that, like where you had this sort of crazy, the over the top villains and sort of elaborate plots, but it also had this sort of hyperkinetic action that was trendy at the time.
Yeah, that one was kind of a mess and actually flopped in Japan.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't a hit.
Killed the series because I guess they wanted to take it halfway serious. And yeah, so that was a little too much. Yay, this is fun. And I don't know if Shin Godzilla did well in Japan. I haven't paid much attention to it. I think Godzilla 1984 did very well. Like it brought it back because I was reading the IMDb trivia.
Really? I thought it wasn't that big of a. I thought it was kind of a. I don't know.
CNN coverage in the summer of 84 before New World bought it. And they were like, I remember there was a big report on CNN and they were making a big deal about their big 20-foot robot Godzilla that they used for about all the reaction shots, basically. He's barely in the film, almost like the big 40-foot robot Kong for De Laurentiis' 76 film. They were getting a lot of publicity for that. I think they wanted like a lot of money for it. And allegedly they talked to all the major studios and basically got turned down. And then basically New World Pictures made a deal for it and, did the big Americanization of it. And it was released the following, you know, a year later, the following summer.
It was Godzilla in 1985.
Right. And it did okay. It did okay for a New World Picture in Godzilla 1985 was a regional rollout. I saw it in California in like I think it was June or early July. It was released in Mississippi in September, so okay. It was kind of like they did the regional rollout. But the funny thing was, literally by November it was on television. Like they did a direct sale to like WGN Tribune Media, and it was on WGN like later that year. So they did like a quick sale, and that hadn't been done since Godzilla versus Megalon, which had cinema shares ran all over the country and made a fortune off of it. And I've asked a friend who would know, and I don't think he said it's impossible to get accurate rental gross numbers for Godzilla versus Megalon. But he knows they made a mint off that movie. And it was on NBC by the end of the year, hosted by John Belushi wearing a Godzilla costume.
So do you think with this movie, it was kind of maybe the theatrical box office in Japan wasn't great, but it was like everywhere else it made a ton of money or something?
No, I don't think it made much money everywhere else. I think it did okay. I think it did. It must have done decent enough in Japan for them to revive the series.
I was about to say, because they made more, so it must.
Yeah,
have
they
done
did
okay.
They did Godzilla versus Biollante. A few years later, which was a better film. But, yeah, they just... I don't really know what its box... It must have been successful in Japan, and also...
On Wikipedia, it says it made $11 million, budget was $6.25 million. So I don't know if that's in Japan or what. But, I mean, that's, you know...
That would be in Japan, because they're using the Japanese denomination for dollars, probably, okay. Or whatever.
Yeah, so...
You know, I think it did well in Japan. It did well enough in Japan for them to revive the series.
Yeah, I was about to say, they made a ton of sequels, so yeah.
Yeah, they kept pumping money into it. And I know that it was successful enough that Toho was trying to see if they – was always asking MGM if they could use King Kong. Because King Kong versus Godzilla is still, I think to this day, the most successful Godzilla movie of all time.
And it's a fun movie, too.
Right, and it also saved Universal Pictures. What's an unknown fact is that Universal Pictures, everybody thinks like they were this great classic Hollywood studio. They were actually best known for Abbott and Costello movies and monster movies.
Yeah, the Universal monster movies. I've been rewatching a bunch of them.
Yeah, and it was Abbott and Costello movies in the 50s that kind of kept them afloat. They were basically, they were almost like a B studio. And because they made movies for kids. And then King Kong versus Godzilla saved that studio. Like, it was a huge moneymaker. And stayed in theaters for a long time. And it's like... That was a massive moneymaker at the time. People don't even realize. They look back on this stuff and they think, oh, this is kitschy shit, and people must have just laughed at this crap. But no, this stuff was huge back then. And Godzilla movies were tremendously successful, especially in the 70s and I think in the late 60s for AIP. They made most of their money in the flea pit circuit in the South. The flea pit circuit is what hipsters call it. Grindhouse.
Well, the,
but no,
the,
it was a fleet dead.
John, the white, wrong kind of white people watch those movies, so we don't count that.
Well, the movies were extremely popular with black crowds across the South. Very. That was actually their biggest audience. That was AIP always knew they would make money off that audience.
Yeah, and so thanks for giving birth to hip hop.
Well, I mean, ultra. If you look at the way hip hoppers like Kool Keith, who's an older rapper, worship the likes of Ultraman and Godzilla, it's pretty funny.
Oh they love kung fu movies, monster movies. You know, they love
right, and they love the Godzilla movies in the 60s because I think in give them credit, they were colorblind to the cast.
Yeah,
it didn't bother them that it was all Japanese and no. It was dubbed. They didn't make that into a sarcastic thing. And when I watch these on TV in the 70s, they were always on the UHF channel every weekend. It was a Godzilla movie or a Gamera movie. If it wasn't them, it was Frankie Avalon. I always hoped it was Godzilla.
That's a good point that it wasn't a sarcastic thing. Like
right. They accepted them straightforward. They
yeah,
loved
it. It was just like, all right, that's how it is.
Yeah, it's like they don't, and it never bothered me that they were dubbed. I didn't know that was a bad thing until the late 80s when comedians were making jokes.
No, I mean, when I was a kid, I thought it was a little off-putting, but I just accepted it, you know.
Right. And then when I was a kid in the 70s, most movies were ADR looped. Most American films were dubbed.
Oh, absolutely. They all are.
So it never bothered me. And it's just like, and it's a funny thing. I'll talk to my wife, she can't watch stuff that's dubbed, and I'm like, but yet you watch these old Hollywood movies where they're ADR'd half the time. And especially the James Bond films, the early ones with Sean Connery, a lot of times the leads are dubbed. Ursula Andress is dubbed.
Gert Frobe.
Yeah. It's like, it's a constant thing.
Goldfinger, he was dubbed.
A lot of it's dubbed.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. That was not him saying that.
It just never bothered me because I think I was just used to it. I didn't pay attention to lip movements. The TVs were small back then, too. You got to remember that. Like, it was, if you had a TV over the size of, like, 21 inches, that was saying a lot. You were rich.
I will say, like, dubbing in foreign movies recently I don't like as much, but I think it's kind of a lost art.
They're unprofessional. The new dubs are terrible.
Yeah, like, I mean, because the Kraken Blu-ray, it has an English dub on it, but it's not the 1985 version with Raymond Burr.
Right, it's the Shaw Brothers crew.
Yeah, it's different.
They call him Godzilla.
Godzilla.
Yeah, they could have called it Godzilla 1984.
But like, you know, I was watching the Toho Attack on Titan movie, which is fairly recent, and the English dub was just atrocious. You know, it was just
they don't know how to dub anymore because they don't have guys. Ted Thomas, I think he trained the next generation in Hong Kong. But then nobody trained a new crew in Hong Kong, so a lot of the dubbing is done in California and New York, and I don't think they have any clue how to do it anymore.
The Attack on Titan actually is done in, and I'll bet Shin Godzilla as well is done in Dallas because it's Funimation, and they're they're a Dallas group. They did like Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that.
Well, I did notice one new dub was surprisingly good. Mill Creek released the 3 Majin movies on Blu-ray with the giant statue coming to life. And they restored the syndicated TV dubs, or maybe I think it played some theaters, at least the first one did. So they had the dubs on the Blu-ray. There was never a dub made for the third one. So they did their own dub. They did it surprisingly well. As if the dubbing crew actually watched the other two dubs, or listen to them, and said, okay, we're going to do it in this style where we do these kind of mid-Atlantic accents. and it worked. It's actually a surprise. You would think it was a dub done in 1971, which
that's
is a high
cool. compliment. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I, you know, like I like the dubbing on the Sonny Chiba Street Fighter films and stuff, which were done by Pete Fernandez and Corrine Orr, who did Speed Racer. And Pete Fernandez dates back to like 1950s old-time radio. It's like, so they had experience.
Yeah, Pete Fernandez was on Speed Racer, right?
Right, and he used to do old-time radio shows on NBC like X-1. So he was used to doing character voices.
And he would go, ha! Ha!
Yeah, he would do all that. And William Conrad got his start from that. That's why he had that fantastic voice, you know, before he was Cannon. And he was Marshall Matt Dillon on old-time radio. And he was always the villain on Your FBI or whatever the old-time radio FBI shows are. And he would pop up on Gangbusters and stuff as a villain. He had a great villain voice. And it's like back then, because a lot of those guys who did dubbing in the 50s and 60s, they came from old-time radio. they also worked on radio shows. And like, okay, the first Steve Reeves Hercules film, the American version, not the version you can currently get on DVD, but the version you can find on videotape, if you can find an old VHS, that's Brett Morrison dubbing Hercules' voice, who did the Shadow. He did. I think he was the last guy to do the Shadow's voice for a few years. And he's actually regarded as the best Shadow voice of all time, even over Orson Welles. And he did the Steve Reeves voice.
I was about to say, even over Orson Welles.
Yeah, but although the current DVD that Fred Olen Ray put out with Image uses a British dub, and he's just Steve Reeves doesn't sound quite right in that, although it's passable, but it's not the Brett Morrison dub. And I actually found a VHS of the Brett Morrison dub on Hercules and watched it, and I was just like, wow, he did a great characterization. You would think that's Steve Reeves' voice.
But so the movie itself, Return of Godzilla... I first saw it, as I said, I rented it from, Blockbuster, but I picked it because I was like, oh, it's Godzilla 1985. That's the year after I was born. I'm gonna rent that. But so that was my first Godzilla movie, and, you know, it was, and I think my next one was Godzilla versus King Kong. But, but so, you know, revisiting it, the first thing that I kind of noticed was, where's the Akira Ifukube music?
Right. That's one massive misstep.
Like, you see that Godzilla logo, that classic Japanese Godzilla logo come up, and there's no Akira Ifukube music. And I was like, it's wrong step. You know? Yeah. Like, we have this other score going on. And it kind of has some cues that sort of alludes to it, but it's not the Godzilla score. You know, you need
it's actually very John Williams-ish. It's
yeah, it really... is. It was very 80s, like post-Spielberg type stuff.
Yeah.
Even like in Godzilla versus the Heisei era Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla film, you even had a Spielberg reference where there's a guy on a boat who sees a...
Oh.
And he's like, oh, you will tell your kids about this, Lieutenant Spielberg.
Oh, God.
He gives Steven Spielberg the idea for E.T. or some shit.
Oh, that was so terrible because the Western actors they always use are awful.
Mm. They were awful in this movie. Like, oh, I want to make this joke, but I shouldn't. The American, when they have the Soviet and American conference about what they need to do about the GQ, the Godzilla question.
Yeah,
they have the American ambassador who's like, we need to know what to do about Godzilla. We need to use nukes to destroy Godzilla. but the actors are so terrible who play those roles who speak in English. Like, I was like, where do they find these people? They're terrible.
They get them from English teaching schools.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they just,
and they're exchange students from universities. That's they're, so they're not like trained actors,
but
they literally do open auditions. I think just for, they literally fight people on the street. Hey, you want to be in a movie?
Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, oh,
I mean, I think it's that bad.
You look like an old American diplomat.
Exactly, that's what they do, and like
you
it's
look
funny
like because, an old Russian person.
Well, what's funny is like Nick Adams is in Monster Zero and Frankenstein Conquer the World, and he's good in those. And they actually went through the trouble to hire him because he's having trouble. I think there were some theories he was blacklisted in Hollywood for major studio work because he so arrogantly thought he was going to get an Oscar some certain year. He was practicing his walk to the stage or something. Sorry, Nick Adams experts. I do need to read up more on his career. But so he took these good paying roles from Toho that were lead roles to do these monster films. And I guess he fell in love with one of the actresses. And, you know, and he was married at the time, so it's not too good.
It's kind of a
mean but
Birdman
Nick Adams
situation.
He's really good in Monster Zero.
Yeah, he is. It's a really, that's one of the better Godzilla movies, I think.
And he's doing, if you watch the movie, he straightens his tie constantly and pulls up his pants. And that's an acting trick to always make sure the camera, like the audience will look at you even while other actors are talking. And like everybody makes fun of like that, you know, the way he does that, but it's just that's an old acting trick. If you watch The Magnificent Seven, Steve McQueen is doing that while Yul Brynner's talking. And apparently that was such a like he's constantly fiddling with his hat or, you know, or yeah, messing with his rifle. And it's like Yul Brynner, like, got pissed off about it, supposedly, and, like, had a big uproar with the director. He's got to stop doing that. So it's you're seeing real performances there. And so when you compare it to these Westerners who are in Godzilla in 1984, oh, boy, is it such a difference when you're seeing untrained actors doing this sort of stuff, you know, basically just hired white faces for the camera. Yeah, it doesn't work. And while I was watching the movie, I totally saw why New World cut it to shit. The pacing, even for 1984, is a very slow-paced film.
It's a very slow-paced movie, and it, you know, like Butch was talking about. I think it was Butch. He was talking about Shin Godzilla being a movie where you get 10 minutes of Godzilla destroying shit and 50 to, you know, 70 minutes of people talking about what are we going to do about Godzilla.
Yeah,
this is kind of that movie, you know.
Yeah,
you know, it has some interesting things here. Like, you know, okay, it opens up. You have this isn't really interesting, but it sort of starts out like a reboot. You have sort of a replay of the ship getting destroyed by Godzilla, like in the original film. Then you have a reporter who goes on board and he gets attacked by giant sea lice who have become massive because of Godzilla's radiation.
So, yeah, because we're still in Marvel Comics radiation.
And they're flying around, like these flying sea lice.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But anyway, and they never come back. But so, you know, Godzilla's going to attack Tokyo again. And, you know, you have these few characters. But you also have this sort of international situation where Godzilla destroys a Soviet submarine. And it creates international tension. And, so it is kind of a movie where it's a lot of people standing around going, what are we going to do about Godzilla? Hmm. And I'm kind of like, I don't really give a shit. You know, like, I want alien infiltrators and, you know, people coming around, like, you know, that sort of thing, like apes from space, like in Terra Mechagodzilla. You know, like, I'm like, I don't want us, you know, having this weird international situations. But I was kind of thinking about, while I was watching it, when you had the Americans and the Soviets bullying the Japanese to sort of, you know, let them nuke Godzilla to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, and the president, the Japanese premier, like one of the big plots is him going, you know, oh, you know, this is something I hoped I would never have to deal with, and him having to deal with the GQ, the Godzilla question. So,
right.
So, one thing, like, you know, sometimes you see some, like, anti-Americanism in Godzilla movies, especially the Heisei Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla movie. That's probably the most anti-American Godzilla movie, right?
Well, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah from...
That's the one! That's the one I meant! I'm sorry. Not Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. That's the one I meant. I'm sorry, it's the Mechagodzilla.
They turn Ghidorah into, like, a... like a mecha thing.
Yeah, it's Mecha Ghidra. Yeah.
No, oh, he's turned into Mecha Ghidra to fight Godzilla, who's on the loose after defeating the first Ghidra, who was a an American genetic creation.
Yes,
to
make
Japan buy our computers.
Okay, so so I misspoke earlier. I said Godzilla versus Mecha Godzilla. I was thinking of Mecha Ghidra. So it's Godzilla versus King Ghidorah from the Heisei series.
And this is the funny thing that most Americans never seem to be aware about Godzilla movies. They're Japanese nationalism. They're right-wing Japanese.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. And I was thinking about that while I was watching it. This is exactly, you kind of hit on what I was talking about, John, is I was thinking about, like, during the past year, my political views have altered dramatically.
Uh-huh.
And when I was watching Godzilla 1984... and the Japanese premieres being sort of pushed around by the Americans and the Soviets. In the past, I would have gone like, this guy needs to listen to America, you know? Like,
right.
You know, and when I saw Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, I remember being bothered by how anti-American it was. But now I'm kind of like, this guy's standing up for his people. Fuck yeah, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that's, and so I was like, oh my gosh, that's how my political views have changed. Like, I'm so for this. When I watch it, I'm like, yes, this is a strong leader. He's standing up for his people's interest against people who are trying to push him around. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit if it's Americans, you know. In fact, America today, I don't really like. So, you know,
it's like... Well, like Jack Donovan said, the American flag is not a phallic symbol.
He's absolutely right, you know. You know, Jack Donovan, you know, one of the more red-pilling presences. But, you know, even though he doesn't really run politics too much anymore, but...
No, and who could blame him? I mean, I agree with you. I was watching this. I was like, I was totally rooting for Japan. It's like, yeah, tell Soviet Union and America to fuck off. It's like, you know, it's a why shouldn't they be making their own decisions?
Yeah, I was like, why the fuck would he want what they want? I was sitting there going, like, if I was him, I would be telling them to piss off too, you know. And
exactly.
I'm sure if I watched Godzilla versus King Ghidorah from the Heisei period again, I'd probably be thinking the same thing. You know, I'd be thinking like, oh, you know, the Americans are trying to fuck up their interests.
Japan has a right to be for Japan.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I was really noticing how my views are different watching this movie. So that was one thing I kind of, I found this viewing more interesting than it really was because of that, because I was thinking about how I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm viewing this movie way differently than if I would have watched it 2-3 years ago. You know?
Yeah. And I, one thing I noticed about it, other than the politics that kind of reflect my own, to be honest,
reflect mine as well. You know?
With the pre CGI, a big deal being made about what would be simple shots of a man in a suit walking through a model building set.
Yes.
It's like, these were actually big things because of the suit. It was like they were reintroducing Godzilla after like a 10-year layoff. The last film they'd made was Terror of Mechagodzilla. And by the 70s, and everybody rips on Megalon and Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla and, you know, Terror of Mechagodzilla is these childish films. It's like, yeah, because they were made for children.
I think they're fucking awesome. They're made for children.
They were shown in matinees as part of the champion festivals. They were basically shown to kids. It was like Saturday matinee movies. That's what they were aimed for. And they weren't meant to be serious films seen by adults. They weren't made for adults at all. And I still enjoy those films more than this one, actually. And,
yeah, I do too.
And so when they were reintroducing Godzilla, they were basically having to make a more impressive, serious, you know, he looked like Cookie Monster in the, of the 70s.
They wanted to make him more of the original, the Honda movie where he's like this angel, he's this death, the symbol of destruction.
Yeah, Koji Hashimoto, the director, was actually a assistant to Honda on the Godzilla films of the 60s, and he was never much of a director in his own right. I looked at his career and he didn't really.
Yeah, he never. Much. This is probably the only thing of note he's done.
Right. And then he had directed this and he gives it that very serious, straightforward. You know, it was a big deal back then to have model jets shooting Godzilla in the Toho tank set, you know, the water tank. That was a big, expensive special effects setup. And at least it's happening. And yeah, their Godzilla robot, I don't think looks that good. It's just too.
No, it's in like. In fact, the close-ups of it look like shit. Like, his eyes are too far apart.
I noticed this because it's too clean-looking, and also it reminds you too much of those T-Rex animatronics you see at dinosaur parks.
And also...
That you, just do the roar and, you know...
Absolutely, but, like, and one reason it reminds you of those T-Rex animatronics is that the shots linger too long sometimes.
Yeah.
You'll have the shot where you just see Godzilla, and he's not doing shit, and then he finally moves. And there's several shots like that where it's like, God, just cut the shot shorter. You know, we don't need him sitting there.
He doesn't match the suit very much. He doesn't match the stuntman suit. And the editing is actually a big issue with this movie. I was surprised how these shots would go on forever. And I'm like, wow, movies have really changed in 30 years.
I was sitting there and I was like, you would just see Godzilla's face sitting there and he would look like his... One eye's going that way, one eye's going the other way, and the nose is looking at me like, what do you want from me? But
right. Which was more impressive if you saw it on the big screen. Like, I saw it in a really nice theater in Pleasant Hill. Uh-huh. And one of those... that back then, they had these giant scope screens. They probably still do. And it was a great way to see a movie. And to see this on there, it was very impressive. But watching it on video, it just tells you that the editing was sloppy or they were little too confident in how the Cybot Godzilla looked, I think they called it.
But one thing that I thought was interesting was that, like, you watch the 70s Godzilla movies and Godzilla towers over the buildings. And in this one, the buildings towered over him. And I thought it was kind of like looking at how cyclopean Tokyo was at the time.
Yeah.
Like, Godzilla, the buildings, like, he would, like, crash into the buildings and, like...
And supposedly they made him bigger for this film. I don't really keep up with how they do his height. By the way, Roger Ebert's review of this basically just had him being real, like, all spurging out over the inconsistency of Godzilla's size to objects he was standing on.
Oh, who gives a shit? Oh, my God.
Yeah, because that's all Ebert ever did was just, like, and Armand White called him on it, saying all he does is point out nerdy little inconsistencies in movies. He's not a real critic.
Yeah, he's right.
He was dead on, and it's just like, yeah, that's Roger Ebert for you.
And you know what? Rotten Tomatoes doesn't count because Armand White's opinion is not on there. So
exactly, it doesn't mean anything.
So there, he's the god of critics, and you know, if the god of critics is not included on Rotten Tomatoes, Rotten Tomatoes doesn't mean shit. So
exactly, he's the only critic that means anything or writes anything worthwhile.
Just go to, you know, if you go to
certainly ain't gonna be Devin Faraci.
Yeah. Oh. By the way, let's just take a moment to appreciate the fall of the worst piece of the tumor of film criticism that is Devin Faraci. Just take a moment to moment of silence for what I see as an advance in film criticism. This is a purge. It's a giant
step. The funniest is you look at Amy Nicholson's Twitter page.
Oh, I missed that. I haven't looked at that.
Due to circumstances, we're canceling the pod. We've decided to put the podcast on hold. And it's like, oh, gee.
Oh,
wonder why.
Why is that? Is it because...
I didn't even know he did a podcast. I'm not surprised. I would never listen to it. Sure, I thought he's a worthless critic.
They, you know, I guess him grabbing women by the pussy. You know, Donald Trump just talks about it.
Devin did it.
Devin does it.
Well, welcome to the real world, you liberal cucks.
This is what male feminists do. Okay. Anyway.
Exactly. Well, it's like Gavin McInnes is always saying they're really those rapists, date rapists are really like these Mark Maron types.
Oh, I'm so neurotic.
Yes. Oh, girls.
Oh,
don't like
my
me.
Goodness. Oh.
I'm such a sensitive guy.
Yeah. But, I'm dating a 22-year-old.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, yeah.
But,
I'm sorry, 22 is too old, 18. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Barely. Anyway.
but yeah, this film has a kind of a sloppy pace. It's very slow.
I mean, it does have some good scenes. Like, I liked the scene where, like, Godzilla makes landing and the troops, and he, like, fries the troops, and you kind of see the... Because, like, a lot of the times you see, like, tanks and stuff getting fried, and it's like, oh, there's a tank getting fried, but you see, like, soldiers, like, getting killed by Godzilla.
Yeah, I think they were making it clear this was a Godzilla movie for, you know, for older audiences.
Yes.
And, wasn't just for the kids, and it's also there's a lot of nods to like Irwin Allen type productions, like The Towering Inferno, and
there's a lot of disaster movie stuff in this.
Right. It's more like a 70s disaster movie than a Godzilla film, and like some of the action with these Super X fighter plane fighting, you know, Godzilla in the city is pretty neat, and actually that's where I think sometimes the long takes benefit the film a bit. It's because you're seeing all on the set effects, and it actually looks effective. Looks better than anything in Pacific Rim.
Any Godzilla movie looks better than Pacific Rim. Come on.
Oh God, man, that movie, and people love it.
It's dark and it's rainy and we're in the water.
And the camera's shaking around like it's on a helicopter.
It's awesome. It's awesome. If you love Godzilla movies, you'll love this.
Yeah. Oh boy. But I wonder about kaiju fandom. I don't know. I admit I've gone to G Fest twice, and I just kind of wonder sometimes. You know, I don't think I'm on the same page because I think we all come to these movies at a different approach.
Yeah,
and usually when we're kids, like I always said, you can't really get into Godzilla movies as an adult if you never saw them as a kid.
You're
right. It's just like I compare them to pro wrestling. It's just like, you can't get into pro wrestling as an adult. You have to have watched it when you were a kid and you didn't know as much about the world. It's
something that, like, I think that's true of kaiju movies. It's true of monster movies in general.
Yeah.
Like, cause I have friends who didn't grow up watching like horror monster stuff. They didn't get it. And so like, when they watch it now, they kind of just sort of shrug their shoulders. You know, they just,
right.
They're like, what's the big deal?
I'd even go so far as to say kung fu films.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think an adult who's never seen like a kung fu film would get it watching them now. I don't, although that was not the case in the 70s. You know, the adults back then were into them, but...
Well, I will say I didn't get into Shaw Brothers stuff till I was older, but I saw kung fu-inspired stuff when I was younger, so I think it's
right.
Sort of... Whether you could make enough.
Yeah, you could make that leap.
Yeah.
It's like, if you can't make that imagination leap, like, I know there's all these like guys who are like really into MMA, like that's all the reality they know about martial arts,
yeah.
And they think that defines martial arts. They'll like Bruce Lee and that's it.
Yeah.
They'll wonder why all the other martial arts movies don't have guys choking each other for 10 minutes in bikinis, I guess. Because they think that's their only definition
of martial
arts.
They all have tons of tattoos and...
Right, and tap out shit that they're wearing, you know, tap out gear.
Yeah. Tap out.
All that boring crap, you know, it's just like, you know, by the way, one of these days we'll have to do an MMA episode where I'm going to talk about why I think that sport's actually dying. But
I was about to suggest something and then I was like, wait.
What was that? Red belt?
Red belt warrior? I don't know.
I did warrior on the old
show. I was about to say warrior, and then I was like,
we'd have to do Red Belt, which I think is a better film anyway.
Yeah,
but,
no, David Mamet, you know.
Yeah, which nobody went to see.
I saw it. I thought it was great.
I know. I always laugh. I said, you know, these martial arts, these people who don't like martial arts films will sit there and say, well, you know, if they had really good acting and writing, I'd go see them. And then they make one, and then they don't go see it.
Yes.
That's basically, or they make good acting and writing by an American viewer's standards, an American that won't watch something subtitled or dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, that's what people say. When people tell you, I don't watch things that are dubbed, and I don't watch things that are subtitled, they don't want to watch anything non-American. That's
yes.
all they're telling you.
Yes.
You know? So, and a lot of people are like that. And with Godzilla movies, the whole thing that they'll tell you is, I don't watch these because they're dubbed. It's like, well, you're not going to watch a Godzilla movie subtitled.
Yeah.
Don't even, you know, only hardcore fans really watch them that way. I've never had a problem with the dubbing on these films.
I've never had a problem with the dubbing either. And sometimes I watch them sub just to mix it up, but...
Right. I've watched the original subbed, and I watched Godzilla Raids Again subbed because the dub on it's terrible.
Yeah.
And the dub includes George Takei.
I was about to say it includes George Takei.
Yeah, but the dubbing is really bad. Like, the scientists are talking about dinosaurs, and they're saying, thousands of years ago, dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Just a few thousand years ago.
Try a couple of mil, pal.
Kind of like I roam the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
The dubbing's really. I think Key Luke dubbed it as well, and it's just too cartoonish. They didn't give a shit. They call him Gigantus.
It was Gigantus was Godzilla. That's right. They didn't.
Right, because they didn't think they had the rights to use the name Godzilla, even though they bought the movie from Toho. You know, that was originally supposed to be an American. Supposedly this was the case, was a producer, I don't know if it was Sam Katzman or whoever, bought the rights to Godzilla Raids Again. They were going to just use the special effects footage, and they were going to film some giant monster footage in Hollywood to make it seem that Godzilla and Anguirus were attacking San Francisco. And they were going to reshoot all the acting with American actors, and they had a screenplay. It was called The Volcano Monsters.
The volcano god?
And a friend of mine had read the script and said it was basically It Came from Beneath the Sea with two dinosaurs instead of an octopus. He said it was almost the same plot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the friend is August Ragone, so that's, you know, I believe him.
Yeah.
I'm
just saying the plot sounds smooth.
Yeah, and it was a bad script. He told me it was
Well, let's be real, Godzilla Raids Again is not a great movie to begin with. I mean,
no, it isn't. It's not a very good Godzilla.
For the first Godzilla versus movie, it's bleh, you know.
It used to be very hard to see because Warner Brothers owned it, and they didn't it didn't make all the same markets as the AIP Godzilla packages. So it was tougher to see. And the funny thing was, they sent a Godzilla suit and an Anguirus suit to Hollywood for them to use. They never used it. Apparently, Bob Burns, the Hollywood gorilla guy, and Paul Blaisdell, who made a lot of the cool AIP monsters, found the suits one day goofing around in a warehouse in the studio. And they said, oh my gosh, this is Godzilla, and this is Anguirus. And Bob Burns couldn't put on the suits because they were designed for a Japanese stuntman.
Of
and
course, only they're too tiny.
Only Paul Blaisdell could put on the suit. So he put it on, and they were goofing around in the Godzilla and Anguirus costumes, and they put them back. Nobody knows where they went.
They should have kept them.
They said they were damaged. Like, it was obvious they had been used in Godzilla Raids Again, and they had like explosions and, you know, firecracker explosive wounds on them because they had been used for the, you know, jets and tanks are shooting them and stuff. So that was a cool story he told me that I guess has gotten around a bit.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's just like, but with Godzilla 1985, the suit I thought looked pretty good. It was a great way to relaunch Godzilla, but that Cybot just doesn't match. And like you said, the editing is too long.
It just hasn't aged as well as some of the other ones. Like, you know,
no,
just
not at all.
Some of the suit, you can kind of see the mechanical head and the, you know.
Well, he seemed to look totally different in Godzilla versus Biollante.
Yeah, he did.
Like, he looked like a big grizzly bear, so which I thought was a better look for him, and that's kind of how he looked throughout the 90s.
Yeah, so, no, I like that. I like Godzilla versus Biollante a lot. I think that's kind of an underrated Godzilla movie.
It is. It's actually really good. And it's another one that was off of home video for a long time because of various rights issues, because Miramax bought that one with the intention of releasing it, and they never did. They just shelved it.
They put it on a Blu-ray a few years ago.
They had dumped it on VHS like maybe 3 years after they bought it. So
yeah, and I remember the VHS cover for that, and I remember seeing that at the Blockbuster at the same time and thinking, whoa, that's a freaky looking monster that Godzilla's fighting.
I felt like they really missed an opportunity because I think that one would have played well in theaters.
I think it would have too. I mean, it's a more cinematic movie than Return of Godzilla, which looks like a home video movie.
Right. And it's more, it would have looked great on the big screen. And I think they would have had to edit it down, I think, for plot and pacing, because a lot of things in that film are, they're kind of, I remember there was an Iranian character, and a lot of people were baffled, didn't know that Japan has always had kind of a very nice exchange with Iran. Like, they always, like, Iran citizens can come over to Japan and work and stuff. It's not blockaded like it is with the U.S., because, you know, we got the whole thing with the Shah and the Ayatollah in the 70s.
Yes.
there's, I thought a little editing that could have been, and maybe change the score a little bit. I thought that would have been perfect to release in theaters in America.
Yeah,
especially when you think about what was in theaters at the time, as far as like special effects stuff, you could see why people were so starved for a new Star Wars movie like The Phantom Menace,
yeah,
as shitty as it was.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood was not producing much in the way of fantasy, or, you know, your best fantasy film might be Ghostbusters. You just didn't get these kind of special effects spectaculars. They weren't making them. And I don't know why. Like, I don't know if they just thought they were too expensive or whatever. But, like, Stargate comes out of the blue and is a huge hit. And they were totally taken aback by that. Hollywood didn't get it. And it's like, because audiences were starved for some sort of fantastic imagery film. And at that time, the most imaginative films were, like, the horror movies.
Yeah.
Which is a sad statement, because there was not a lot of good horror movies from that era.
And you watch Stargate, and it's a total piece of shit, but when you think about it in the context of the times, people really wanted something sort of totally out of this world, and that was a totally out of this world movie that dealt with, like, sort of mystical culture with Egypt and stuff.
And if anybody brings up Star Trek, the Star Trek movies are visually incredibly flat and boring.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're not nearly as visually interesting as the Star Wars movies, and, you know.
No, not at all. And that's what people want. Like, there was something Anthony Kubia was saying, like, why are they released? There should be the only space opera movies, or the only science fiction movies we want, are Star Trek and Star Wars, because they're the only ones that look good. Like, he's like, he won't accept any other type of science fiction thing.
Yeah. I mean, but like, you watch like Star Trek 3 or something, and it's not a very interesting looking movie. I mean,
it's boring looking. It's very flat.
You know,
it's like a TV show.
Yeah, I mean, even the, you know, I really like Wrath of Khan, but even that's sort of, it's not as bad as Star Trek III in terms of the flat look, but it even still kind of feels that way.
I like it, but it's like a TV movie.
I think the most visually rich one might be Star Trek VI.
Really?
The Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
Because I think the one with the two whales, they needed to stop the... It was like a lead pipe with a volleyball attached to it. It was like threatening the Earth. Yeah, yes. That one is... They just go to San Francisco, so you don't have to build like an alien planet or anything.
It felt like a... That one felt like a really good episode of the show. That's what it felt
right.
like.
Right. That's what... They're not... People just forget. Like, back then, if you had put Godzilla versus Biollante in theaters, at that time, those effects would have looked really dynamic.
Yeah, because the monster was crazy. I mean, there was never a Godzilla monster like that. It was just this fucking nutso plant that... Oh my god, it was just, I remember seeing it and thinking it was such a trip, you know?
Like, yeah, and especially considering at that time, like, Fox was voicing, like, a shitty-looking Alien 3 on us, where he was bred with a dog. Like, boy, we just don't give a fuck about
it. And they're in prison, and, you know, everybody's sad, and...
Right. And a Batman, you know, Batman movies, where he's basically patrolling Broadway Gotham.
Oh god.
And I'm even talking about the Tim Burton films. He just looks like he's a, you know, Batman is the vigilante of the soundstage.
Batman on ice. That's what it is.
And, you know, it's just like, that would have been a fine release for that time. Because that time was in America starving for, like, imaginative entertainment and wasn't getting it. It's funny that now I can look back on it and remember, wow, if you liked special effects movies, that was a shitty time to go to the movies.
Yeah. And, like, Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, too, was a pretty cool-looking movie. Like,
right, you know, I think we know why that one didn't get released.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most anti-American of all of them.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
It never really bothered me then, and certainly doesn't bother me now, but, you know, it's just... But that one, that was blatant with the Godzilla-saurus basically attacking U.S. soldiers.
Yes, yes.
And saving a Japanese platoon and all that stuff.
And I love the old Japanese soldier who sees him and then Godzilla fucking kills him. Hilarious.
That was such a strange but very amusing piece of Japanese nationalism.
Yes, it was.
And King Ghidorah is my favorite of the Godzilla villain monsters.
Oh, so. Absolutely. He's way... You know, that movie rules because you get a fucking, like, decked out King Ghidorah, then he comes back as Mecha Ghidorah. It's just
and
awesome.
You know in Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, he's supposed to represent China.
Oh, yeah, he's supposed to be Chinese aggression, and this one, he's American aggression.
Yeah, you know? And it's like, the original Honda Ghidorah is basically a tie-in to, I guess, the Chinese had their own nukes and were testing them, and Ghidorah was kind of a reaction to that. And, of course, he looks like the Chinese dragons of myth.
Yes,
and
he does.
With the three heads and everything. But, yeah, I thought Ghidorah is always my favorite. In fact, one of these days I need to buy, like, a big, impressive garage kit Ghidorah. And though I don't buy toys and stuff, but, you know, I kind of want a huge Ghidorah.
But Ghidorah's fucking display. Cool. That's the thing.
Exactly. Ghidorah's the coolest villain, you know, the coolest Godzilla villain. I love the original Mecha Godzilla, too, of the... you know, the original two films.
Yes.
Not the kind of round Mechagodzilla that they have in the 90s and Double-Aught movies, which are, you know, it's like comparing a Toyota Corolla now to, like, a Camaro back in the 70s.
Exactly.
There's no angles, no sharp ends, just all round and bubbly looking, you know. It's not as cool as that old one. But, yeah, the... this film, I thought one problem. I was actually a little stunned to read this because I hadn't read anything about Godzilla 1984 in forever because I never cared that much for it. It was originally planned to have a monster in it, and when they were going to do it in 1980, they were going to call it the Reawakening of Godzilla, and the monster they were going to use was Bagan. B-A-G-A-N, and he was a shape-shifting monster that would have three forms. And he may have been developed out of the screenplay they had called Godzilla versus the Devil, because The Exorcist and the Omen were so huge at the time, they wanted Godzilla versus the Devil, and the Devil would be a shape-shifting form. He would be like a monster fish, then he would be like a monster ape, and then I think he was going to be like a flying monster.
So he's like Frieza from Dragon Ball Z. This isn't even my final form!
Right. And that was, and so they developed it into Godzilla vs. Bagon, and then they had a version of that with one of the Mothra movies, but he wasn't quite what they had conceived with the Godzilla film in 1980, and I think they were still working on it, and then by the time they made Godzilla 1984, they just decided to make it basically a remake of the 56 film, even though it's a direct sequel. So it pretends Godzilla has never come out of the ocean since 1954. So, you know, it's that kind of like, I'll throw out all continuity of the all the Honda films afterwards and Jun Fukuda's films and all that stuff. It's like, you know, he's never been seen until now. So they, which they tend to do with that series constantly, is they reboot the continuity. You know, they're worse than the comic book companies like Marvel and DC when they reboot their characters and act like nothing happened before. You know, but they always act like, okay, he came out in 1954, he's coming back now, or, you know, even though we thought we killed him. So that was a way they were kind of just to reinvigorate the series. It worked. I mean, they started making them till the 21st century. So that's basically, this is the start of the Godzilla we have today.
Yeah, it really
more so than the Honda films. That series was supposed to be dead by 1975.
Oh yeah,
lot of people feel the series died with Honda. Like Honda and Tsuburaya, the series after those guys, you know, didn't work on them anymore. Tsuburaya died in like 1970.
And I think you can see that there's a distinct feel that's lost. I mean, I like a lot of the Godzilla movies that were made after, but the ones I watch the most are from that initial period.
Right, I can go back and watch those anytime. Watching any of them from the 80s and 90s takes a little bit commitment. I really don't care for any of the ones made in the 21st century. Megaguirus is okay because it's more like a monster movie, but the American one, which we reviewed last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember. I enjoyed that one. I actually enjoyed that one more than a lot of the...
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think it plays better in the theater than it does at home, but...
It does not play well on home video.
I mean, when I watch it on home video, I get pretty bored. But when I saw it in the theater, I saw it in the theater twice, and I thought it fucking ruled both times, you know.
If you see any of these in the theater, they're way better to see in a theater. They're meant to be seen in a theater. Like, I'd always thought Terra Mechagodzilla was kind of underwhelming on TV, although I was glad when I saw it. It was one of my first video rentals, because that was tough to see at the time. And but when a friend bought a 35mm print, and we were able to screen it at a theater on a Saturday morning, because the owner let us, it was stunning to watch on the big screen.
Yeah.
Like, they are a completely different experience on the big screen. Like, the effects that might seem too corny or whatever on TV do not look corny on the big screen.
Yeah, they don't.
They weren't meant to be seen on television. They were not designed that way.
No.
And especially back then, we had pan and scan tapes. And, had to have a friend. I had a friend who was looping the English audio over the Laserdisc from Japan, and so getting his tapes was always a big deal. Like, oh, I get to finally watch this on widescreen. It's how desperate we were back then. But, you know, it's just, and of course now it's like the standard. You see everything widescreen. Nobody knows what it was like to watch these pan and scan on television back in the 70s. It was just very frustrating. But, you know, and a lot of times we didn't know what we were missing, but I knew that what I was watching sometimes was very incomprehensible.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially the TV ads were always incomprehensible. But these are definitely, like, if I saw this version, Godzilla 1984, if I had a chance to see it on the big screen, I would go in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was excited to get the Blu-ray just because I was like, you know, I have fond memories of it from when I was a kid. But also, you know, I don't think it's a bad movie by any stretch.
No, not at all.
I mean, but... If it was on the big screen, I'd absolutely go see it. I mean, it's got enough of that classic feel. It's not it's not a classic, but it has enough that reminds you of why you like Godzilla movies, I think.
Right.
And
it's
So let's do our ratings. What would you give it out of 10?
I would give it, I guess I have to go with like a 6.
Yeah, I was going to go with 6 giant sea lice out of 10.
6 super X's. Well, the thing is, and this is one thing I should say, I think the movie's actually well acted.
It is. And, you know, I thought the three characters, the sort of the brother, sister, and the reporter was a good dynamic.
Yeah, I forgot that they actually, Toho actually had good actors for these. But the thing that bothered me was in the third act, there's this bum character.
Yes.
And I know what you liberals are thinking. How could there be bums in Japan? Ronald Reagan didn't release the mentally ill out of the hospitals in Japan.
He didn't discriminate against black people.
Yeah, they didn't have Ronald Reagan there to create the homeless problem in Japan.
They don't have black people in Japan.
Right. Well, there's a homeless guy, and then there's a scene where he's running away from Godzilla, and they did it as a Raiders of the Lost Ark tribute. I thought that was so obnoxious, and I hate... I'm sorry, you know, this is the only time I'll apologize. I cannot stand that John Landis, Joe Dante, nod and wink visual allusion to a movie from just 3 or 4 years before.
I thought that scene was way out of place. Like, yeah, when I was watching it, I was like, what am I... Now that you said it's a Raiders thing, I was like, "Oh, is that what they were going for?" Because yeah, I didn't get it. I was sitting there
in the boulder. It was just like
I was sitting there going, "What the fuck am I watching? What is this scene? What does this have to do with anything?"
It killed the vibe. This was what was so funny was fanzine editors back in the 80s and 90s, like, American movies suck. Japanese and Italian horror films are better. Okay, on some level they are, but you have to keep in mind that all those Japanese and Italian directors completely worship Steven Spielberg. Like, anytime they're interviewed, Umberto Lenzi would be like, the greatest director is Steven Spielberg.
Spielberg.
Enzo Castellari, the greatest director.
Well, look at Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. They have, like, a blatant Spielberg.
Yeah, they worship Spielberg in Japan. It's like, his movies will do well there.
I can't imagine why it's anti-American.
It's like it's just they love Spielberg in these countries, and so you always get these little visual references to that stuff. It's like that was the only thing that I think is a big strike against the film, and that just totally took me out of it.
Otherwise
I give it a 6 because the acting is very well done, and it's funny, I'm now kind of probably overpraising films from that era because they have things that you don't see in movies anymore, mm-hmm. which is on camera, on the set, live effects.
It gives you nostalgia for a simpler time.
Before
Western civilization totally crumbled.
No. Before digital processing on video prints
yes.
made every effect look bad, including Ray Harryhausen movies, so... You know, when you see them on the big screen, it's a totally like those birds did not look that cartoonish when I saw it on the big screen in 1985. Yeah, Godzilla's following the birds.
Yes.
And so it's like it just wasn't that bad, but I give it 6. I give it 6.
Yeah, I give it a 6 as well. I'm on the same page.
Now the Raymond Burr version. I guess we can briefly go over that. They shorten the film. They tighten the pacing. It has these cheap shots that apparently shot in somebody's home of Raymond Burr at the Pentagon as Steve Martin, his character from the 1954 version. I haven't watched it in years.
I don't remember any of that, to be honest.
I couldn't tell you much. There was a lot of wink, wink, nudge, nudge humor about, oh, look, they're drinking Dr. Pepper. And, it was a little strained. Some people are nostalgic for that version. I was actually told. So, years ago, a friend told me, I don't know how true this is, he said that Japanese fans actually preferred the American version because it got to Godzilla a lot quicker, because they thought the original Japanese version was too slow-paced.
Well, I remember like, sitting there going, okay, when are we going to see Godzilla? Like, I was like, come on, give me the good stuff.
Yeah, you don't see him until 35 minutes into the film. Like, shows up at the power plant, and I think he showed up a lot quicker in the American version, but I haven't seen it in years to verify that. Because I remember we didn't have to wait that long. I think the American version cut way back on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which they had every right to do. That's just the way it was, back then. Originally, they were supposed to dub it with What's Up Tiger Lily comedy dialogue, and luckily Raymond Burr stomped his heavy gay foot down and said, no way.
Oh, God, that would have been terrible.
I know, and he said, I'm not going to do it if you guys do that to this movie, because this stuff is serious. Like, give him credit. He took Godzilla seriously.
He was like, oh, no, and I think he knew that people, he probably took the original seriously, so he didn't want to see them making fun of it.
Exactly, and that's got to be insulting when you say, oh, so you're saying the movie I did is a piece of crap. You know, that's
exactly.
That's what I hate about that Mystery Science Theater 3000 shit. So it's like they've really, I know everybody will be like, oh, those movies aren't as good as you remember. To me, that's kind of like how people are claiming old Ghostbusters isn't as funny as you remember because we made this feminist version. And the original with Bill Murray is not funny because it's masculine. You know, because testosterone is you know, makes it unfunny. It's just so untrue. And with the Mystery Science Theater 3000 stuff, they're just making fun of things that's like, all right, if you're making fun of Godzilla versus Megalon, it was never made for adults.
Yeah, exactly. It's
so, you know, I could do this to any Disney film that people hold as classic and cherish.
Although, if you were to ask the Mystery Science Theater people, do you like these movies? They would say, yes, we do. We're just, you know, having fun with it. I mean, a lot of them say, like, you know, we grew up watching, like, you know, you listen to interviews with Joel Hodgson, he'd say, oh, I grew up watching this stuff on UHF. You know, it was just, we're just having fun with it. Like,
right.
You know, but problem is the thing it does in culture gives, it's just like, it feeds the wrong side of people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, the fans become condescending to the material.
Exactly. And like a lot of the movies that, you know, MST3K makes fun of, you know, are movies I like, you know, I think they're enjoyable and that, you know, it's just like, it's not for the Swipple audience, you know?
Right. It's like, yeah, I don't really care. They make fun of Laser Blast or something like that, but you know, Gamera movies are made for kids.
Godzilla
movies, the ones they did were made for children.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, to me, that's like me grabbing something like E.T. or, you know, Tron, which was made for children, and just ripping on that to shreds. It's just like, you know, people hold all that stuff dear. And I'm like, yeah, and it wasn't made for adults. It's like Godzilla vs. Megalon was never made with adults in mind, you know. And I remember when critics, and this is a funny, you know, we talk about the Lego movie being accepted a certain way. It's like, why are critics reviewing this stuff?
Yeah, well, like, I remember I was, I've said this a million times on the podcast, but I've just been like, I don't want to go see the Lego movie because it's an advertisement for a toy. You know, it's not for me.
Yeah, it's for children. It's made for kids. That's all it's meant for. You know, I hate it when adults claim this, oh, this Lego movie's great. Why? What makes it any different than a Michael Bay Transformer movie? It's just selling toys. You can't tell me that stuff's more noble or it's smart satire.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those things where you go, I had friends inviting me to see it, and I just said, no, I don't want to go see it because, you know, we're not going to see that. I'm going to go see something else if we're two dudes going to see that. You know, like, if you want to go see that with your kids, I'll go with you, but.
Right. I totally understand taking kids to see stuff.
But. Yeah, exactly. I was like, if we're going with your kids, fine, but I'm not going.
Honestly, a 40-year-old man with no kids going to see Kubo and the Magic String at a 10 p.m. showing, it's a little weird.
Yes, exactly. Well, so, but, you know, if you're a Godzilla fan, you know, I recommend picking up the Kraken Blu-ray just to complete your collection. But if, you know, you haven't seen a lot of Godzilla movies, I think I would start with something else. Maybe just...
Exactly.
Honda's original might be a good place to start, but...
Or any of the 60s films.
Any of those. I mean, honestly, like, Honda's original is not a good representation of what the other films are.
Right.
But it's Ground Zero.
You know,
like Hiroshima, you know?
Yeah. I would start with Ghidra or even Monster Zero.
Yeah, I mean, those are absolutely great movies. I mean, you know,
Godzilla versus Mothra, which played on TV endlessly as Godzilla versus,
you know,
the
that,
Thing.
Yeah, and that's one that I really liked too, growing up. So you know, you can't really go wrong with a lot of those Ishiro Honda Godzilla movies. But this one's more for fans. I was, you know, it was the first one I ever saw, and you know, it sort of got me into Godzilla, but. It was good for me as a kid, I guess. But if I was an adult seeing it, I probably wouldn't feel compelled to watch more. But but so yeah. Anyway, but pick it up if you're already a Godzilla fan,
right?
I think.
And I would get into the there was a Steve Miner production that was supposed to be made before this, where they were going to do Godzilla in 3D with a terrible Fred Decker script. It was basically just a plagiarism of Gorgo, which was a British Godzilla ripoff, which is actually pretty good. And they didn't make that film. That's one thing. That's one reason this got delayed so much. And it was supposed to, you know, it was supposed to be made in 1980. And then they were fielding offers from Hollywood to do an American Godzilla movie that far back. And I think when that fell through, that's why they went ahead with the 1984 movie. And I just remembered this. But I remember Steve Miner and Fred Decker were trying to get their own Godzilla movie off the ground. And you can find some of the storyboards online and stuff, but I'm kind of glad the movie wasn't made because it doesn't sound like this. The script was written. Fred Decker didn't like Godzilla movies, and he wrote the script. And the description I read felt like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, I actually believe if you to do an American Godzilla movie, you have to actually be a fan of Godzilla movies from Japan.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why the Roland Emmerich one sucked.
Yeah, because he didn't like them. It's like
he wanted to do a Spielberg movie. That's it.
Yeah, and that was a job that Fox or no, it was Sony. Sony was willing to pay another filmmaker to do and not bring in at the budget. Jan de Bont wanted like $100 million. They thought he was crazy, and they told him to go away. And he had a way more exciting script he was planning.
Right, and, I remember reading about that.
Yeah, and his was Godzilla fighting another monster across the United States, kind of like the one that came out a couple of years ago from Legendary, and that. Well, they didn't want to do that because it was going to be really expensive. He was going to use a lot of computer effects. So they went with Roland Emmerich came up with a much cheaper pitch for like half the cost. But the problem was they had to do so many special effects reshoots because the studio executives looked at the footage and said, he looks like a man in a suit. He can't look like that. And so they had to reshoot and scrap a lot of stuff. And they were doing it down to the wire. So it ended up costing like something like $20 million more than what Jan de Bont wanted in the first place. To do his Godzilla.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So yeah, and it's all because of corporate stupidity. And then they made a movie that was most Godzilla fans didn't, even little kids didn't recognize it as a Godzilla film. They were like,
no, I remember seeing it and going, you know, it just feels more like Jurassic Park. You know, I was
it was boring.
I was in like sixth grade or seventh.
Yeah,
grade.
You were a kid. You were a kid and you called bullshit. On
yeah, that. I was just sitting there going, you know, I was like, yeah, it just feels like Jurassic Park light. You know, that's it.
Yeah, and that's all it was. It was their own trying to do their own Jurassic Park.
It doesn't feel like Godzilla to me. You
know? Very universally hated by fans, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
And also, it's the movie that killed Harry Knowles' credibility.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, we can thank it for that.
Because he wrote a salivating review because they gave him a bunch of candy.
They gave him a lot of Gibbs me debts, you know.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of gifts, and he wrote this like review praising it. When it came out, everybody said, oh, God, Harry's for sale.
Yep.
Oh.
Hollywood was willing to buy him, and he was willing to spread it, you know.
And I think after that and him ripping on Matt Drudge, his website never recovered.
Well, it's because, you know, Drudge like gave him so much, and he basically disavowed Drudge just to signal to his liberal Hollywood friends, you know.
Yeah, and then boy did that fuck him up.
Yeah, exactly. It's just because it revealed what he is. He's a fucking you know, backstabbing asshole.
Yeah, the funny thing is, if you look on the message boards, they've just been invaded by, like, alt-right trolls.
Oh, well, good. Good. Good.
I suspect the alt-right trolls may have actually practiced on their board before they started going.
They practiced there in 4chan's poll, and then they just rain Pepe's down on Harry. You know.
I love the idea of a reign of Pepe's, but yeah, I would recommend getting this movie if you're God, just like you, if you're Godzilla.
If
fan.
You're, it's yep. It's for fans only. If you're not already in on the Godzilla, the GQ, the Godzilla question, then you know, start with the beginning.
Right, and I mean, it's a cheap Blu-ray too, so it was like, it's not expensive. So
you can get the pop-up Criterion Blu-ray from the original if you're so inclined.
Definitely, I still have my old DVD from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I had that book one that opened up.
Classic Media.
Yeah, Classic Media. That was
that's the one I got. I didn't upgrade to Criterion. Just like, I don't see the point on a 50s black and white film.
Yeah,
sorry, Criterion freaks, but there's not much you could. I've seen it in a theater.
It has a pop up Godzilla when you open it up. but I saw it in the theater too, and you know, it looks the same. you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to upgrade that picture, you know.
Exactly. It's like, come on. But yeah, it's like, that's all I can say. It's a 6. All
right, man. Yeah, it's a 6. And anything we want to mention before we get some business out of the way?
It's your business. Like, you know, we're on the phantomsway.com and our own site and iTunes. And please, please give us a review. Bad or good, we'd prefer good. But please review us on iTunes. It helps.
Yes, we want those iTunes reviews more than we want donations.
Right, and I'd like to point out, notice we have done 3 or 4 completely different shows every week.
Yes.
And please keep that in mind when you write a review, that we don't do the same show every week.
Yes.
So, and we have new listeners, and we thank them for coming aboard. And and those new listeners, I think, are here because we've done completely different
shows. Yeah, well, you know, because we hit a different audience. You know, people, you know, might come on because of something, then might stay on or...
Right.
But, you know, that's, I think we're pretty diverse.
Yeah. Check in with us. Maybe we got a show that'll appeal to you, you know. Yeah. I think a lot of people just get into the jokes and the banter and just want to hear it.
Absolutely. You know, we're always
about everything.
Saying shitty things, yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, MidnightMovieCowboys.com, MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com, all that good stuff. And anything else, John?
Nah, that's it.
All right. Adios.
And mahalo. And Magadog.
Magadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Team.